Okay, good evening, everyone. We're continuing with our next class on our hot topics. Somebody's supposed to push that button. I don't know what. I guess this topic isn't as hot as the other topics. Okay, I hope it's large enough. The name of the topic is the parameters and limits of relationships and contact between men and women. And we're going to start with the topic. The main idea of the topic is the idea of, and we have to learn a few terms because it works a lot easier if you use the Hebrew terms, which is called Shomer Negia. Shomer, one is guards or observes the laws of Negia, touching, where you don't touch women of a different gender. And these are the issues you want to discuss tonight as time allows. So what is the status of the halacha of Shmirat Negia, of men and women coming into contact with each other?
What can kind I sit at the women's table?
Yeah.
What kind of touching does it relate to? Is this limited to physical contact? Is that large enough? Can you see that over there?
Mm-hmm.
What about professional touching, medical care, therapies, handshaking? Which people does it relate to? Family, children, same gender? May one have intimacy outside of marriage? And how does it impact on sitting close to some of the opposite gender? Is one required to switch seats?
There you go.
Oh, I don't know if we're going to get to everything, but we're going to start with an article that was written a long time ago, in the year 2002. Someone, I believe it's the New York Times, had a column about called the Ethicist. And this was, it's like the Dear Abbey of Ethics, I guess. And this is the, took a little liberties with the pictures. This was the question that was asked to the person, that to this fellow. The courteous and competent real estate agent I just hired to rent my house shocked and offended me when, after we signed our contract, he refused to shake my hand, saying that as an Orthodox Jew, he did not touch women. As a feminist, I oppose sex discrimination of all sorts. However, I also support freedom of religious expression. How do I balance these conflicting values? Should I tear up our contract? Signed, J.L. from New York. Okay, so this is the answer from the great Chashuv ethicist. He says like this: the culture clash may not allow you to reconcile the values you esteem, or this culture clash. Though the agent dealt you only a petty slight without ill intent, you're entitled to work with someone who will treat you with the dignity and respect he shows his male clients. If this involved only his own person, adherence to laws concerning diet or dress, for example, you should, of course, be tolerant. But his actions directly affect you. And sexism is sexism, even when motivated by religious convictions. I believe you should tear up your contract. Had he declined to shake hands with everyone, there would be no problem. What he may not do, however, is render a class of people untouchable. Were he, say, an airline ticket clerk who refused to touch Asian Americans, he would find himself in hot water, and rightly so. Bias on the basis of sex is equally discreditable. Some religions that assign men and women distinct spheres argue that while those two spheres are different, neither is inferior to the other. This sort of reasoning was rejected in 1954 in the great school desegregation case Brown versus Brown Board of Education, when the Supreme Court declared that separate is by its very nature unequal. That's a pretty good ethical guideline for ordinary life. There's a terrific moment in Cool Hand Luke, I don't even know what the name of this movie is. Anyway, it was a long time ago, when a prison guard about to put Paul Newman in the sweatbox says, I quote from memory, "Sorry, Luke, just doing my job." Newman replies, "Calling your job don't make it right, boss." Religion, same deal. Calling an offensive action religious doesn't make it right. Okay, so that might be the opinion of some people you may know and would find, and they find it very offensive if they would want to shake your hand. You may not want to shake their hand. So that's on the one side. That was in 2002. So now I whipped out a Wikipedia. I don't know if I pronounce it right.
Wikipedia.
About something that didn't exist in 2002.
Me Too.
Okay. The Me Too movement. Okay. So I hope you can read this. A little bit, I don't know if I can touch it. Anyway, I'll read it if you can't read it. Just a few snippets. What's going on? Analyses of the movement often point to the prevalence of sexual violence, which has been estimated by the World Health Organization to affect 1/3 of all women worldwide.
Wow.
A 2017 poll by ABC News and the Washington Post also found that 50% of American women report receiving unwanted and inappropriate sexual advances, with 95% saying that such behavior usually goes unpunished. Others state that Me Too underscores the need for men to intervene when they witness demeaning behavior. Now, one of the people who started, named Burke, says sexual violence is usually caused by someone the woman knows. So people should be educated from a young age. They have the right to say no to sexual contact from any person, even after repeat solicitations from an authority or spouse, and to report predatory behavior. Alyssa Milano described the reach of Me Too as helping society understand the magnitude of the problem and said it's a standing in solidarity to all those who have been hurt. She stated that the success of Me Too will require men to take a stand against behavior that objectifies women. I put those two items to start to show you the inherent inner conflict that secular society has provided for themselves. Okay? I think it's a good point and counterpoint. And that, I think, is a good introduction to our subject matter for tonight. So let us start with the, going back to the Torah sources. I hope, I'm trying to make this not so scholarly, because then it will bore everybody, but you have to talk about some scholarship to know what things are and what they aren't. So let's start with the Torah prohibitions. It's right there in Parshas Achrimos in the book of Vayikra. And just for this line, I have the Hebrew because it's important. I got it translated in English, but there's some Hebrew words that you really need to know to talk intelligently about the subject matter. And there's some words I'm just going to use that are the Hebrew because they don't really translate well into English. So I'm sorry about that. It says, "Ish ish el kol she'er b'soro lo sikravu legarlos ervani Hashem." No man, and that doesn't only mean a man; it means a woman. That's just the way the Torah writes it.
No person.
A person shall come near to any of his close relatives to uncover their nakedness. I am the Lord. So, not to have intimacy—that's clear. Okay, and then a little bit later, then it lists a whole number of people you cannot have relations with. And to a woman during the uncleanness of her separation, when she's a nida, you shall not come near to uncover her nakedness. Elisha benidas tu masalo sikrav legalo servosa. So what is clearly prohibited is actual intimacy, physical intimacy with these people. But also, as we'll see shortly, there's something else added. So apart from the sexual relationship, the Torah includes a separate prohibition based on the words lo tikrivu. You shall not come close to one of the arayos. That's a word we're going to use often. Arayos means forbidden relatives or people you're forbidden to have intimacy with. Okay? There's a number of relatives that one cannot have intimacy with, as well as for any woman who's a nida. Things like that, we'll talk about that. So those are the words you have to kind of remember going over and over. Lo tikrivu, don't come close, meaning we'll have to define what that means. But that clearly is not the sexual act. There's something before that. And arayos are the forbidden relatives. Okay, the relationship of erva includes the most serious sexual prohibitions, which include, not limited to, married women, adultery, specific relatives, incest, certain relatives of one's spouse, the spouse of certain specified relatives, like in-laws, step-relatives, nida, and broader sexual prohibitions, such as homosexuality and bestiality. It's all the Torah prohibits. The Orach HaShulchan, one of the later commentaries, says today, now the question is, what about a single woman? Just a regular single woman. So he said, like many, when a single woman may not go to the mikvah, her status in relation to other men is one of biblical erva. Any single woman who has had a menstrual cycle is a nida. And the Torah says that a husband can't be with a nida, let alone anyone else. So that will affect all single women. And in other places, the Torah, you know, also does not permit rape, seduction, and things like that. Okay, just to make some women say, oh, it doesn't say anything about rape. So I just want to say, no, you can't rape either, you can't seduce people, etc., etc. Okay, that's the opening source from the Torah. So what does coming near mean? What does the Torah mean when it says coming near? So there's different places in the Talmud that say the following critical clauses. They say there's a separate prohibition of kiruv basar, means flesh touching each other, intimate closeness with arayos that fall short of full relations.
Okay.
It does that.
It does that. It's going to happen all the time. That's the way it is. So we're talking about a closeness. It's not full relations, but some kind of closeness. The rabbi says it's a fence from within the Torah, where the Torah creates a halacha to protect another more serious Torah mitzvah. Lo tikrevu, you shall not come close, includes intimate contact, such as hugging, kissing, sleeping in the same bed, fully clothed, and even flirting, as we will see. And the Talmud has a great line. It says, in Talmudic line, it's a lot better than the English translation. Ein apotropos la'arayos, which poorly translated into English, there's no such thing as an executor over arayos. Which means to say, if you have an executor over an estate, he can watch things and manage things. You can't have anybody who's watching. We'll just put so-and-so in charge of 100 university students on a co-ed trip to make sure nothing's going to happen. Okay, there's no such a thing. That's the Talmud throws that line out. So what's the point of these statements? Is that such closeness is a Torah prohibition. Not just, it's not a good idea. Okay, so anybody who follows the Torah not only will not have sexual relations with these people, will not have this closeness, which we further defined. When it comes to, and therefore we can draw another conclusion, when it comes to sexual temptation, no one is immune. As such, halachic fences, such as shomer negia, making sure not to touch people, and yichud, which is seclusion of a man and woman alone, which I'm not going to be able to have time to get into tonight, are not just technical prohibitions, but also useful and valuable social tools to avoid moving beyond a point of no return. Okay, so now we have to get a clearer definition. What does coming near mean in halacha? So we go to the Rambam, which is one of the earliest codifiers of the Torah, and there's going to be a lot of discussion about this. He says, whoever shares physical intimacy with one of the arayos without actually becoming involved in sexual relations or embraces and kisses one of them. Now here's the critical line. Out of desire. That's going to be a critical line that's going to be analyzed by many. And derives pleasure from the physical contact should be lashed according to scriptural law. Doesn't come with the punishment of kares or other punishments that are much more severe. But lashes is no picnic. And the fact that the Torah prohibits it means you're not following the will of God. Okay, so a lot of people are ready to go, oh, well, you don't get stoned for it, you don't get cards for it, how bad could it be? It's probably just the rabbis were a little bit concerned and wanted to make sure, so it's only a rabbinic statement, so that's not true. It's a biblical prohibition, so the fact that the punishment isn't as severe doesn't mean it's any less of a problem. Okay, so there's a lot of people who have the wrong ideas. They think, oh, it's just the rabbi said you can't do this. Okay, so you get current spiritual laws, and it's based on a pasuk where it says to refrain from performing any of these abominable practices. Now, it's a Hebrew clause. It's very interesting to know. Levilti asos mechukos hatoevos. Chukos usually means a chok, means like a law of the land. You know, we shouldn't behave the way the non-Jewish world has their social understanding of things, as we'll see in a minute. The Rambam clearly, that's a Torah writing this, as we'll see in what that means. And the Torah says, do not come close to reveal nakedness. Implied is that we are forbidden to draw close to acts that lead to revealing nakedness. So the observation we can make in the Rambam is he links shmirat negiyah, coming into any kind of contact, with chukim. Chukim, that's like a law of the land, so to speak, of the sexual liberal societies around the Jews all the time. The Rambam's writing this in the year 1100.
Oh my gosh.
Okay, he's not writing it now. And it's not the Rambam. It's God who wrote it. The Rambam's just quoting God. So we're going back 3,300 years ago when the Jews left Egypt and they're going into Canaan. God is calling these chukos hatoevos, abominable practices, but he calls it a chok. And the Targum that explains where chok calls it nimusim, which means social conventions of the non-Jewish world. In other words, don't be involved in any type of closeness, which is a social convention of the non-Jewish world. Besides all the actual sexual activities, but the things that are before that. Okay? So you see, so if that was going on in the times of the Torah and in the times of the Rambam, so the obvious point is, so what's new today that we haven't heard before? So a lot of people say, well, everything's different now. It's the exact same libido, same sexual desire, hasn't gone any more or less in the last 5,780 years. Okay, that's an important point to realize. It's not that the Torah didn't think about it. The Torah had no idea that there'd be, you know, mores. It was a real prudish world. Nobody would think of touching anybody. The world was as corrupt 3,300 years ago, not more, not less, than it is today. Okay, this may make an interesting comment on the role of social touching in society, etc. So what do we draw there? The Rambam is saying that the Torah mitzvah of Shmirat Negiah specifically addressing these issues. This verse is also the origin of the Torah imperative to create fences around the mitzvahs. If something is important, you guard it. You safeguard it. I would imagine some of you have items worth a lot of money. Yes? Well, maybe not. Well, if there wouldn't be, people wouldn't have safety deposit boxes. Certain things, I don't think you'd want your the deed to your home to be burnt.
Right? If things of sentimental value, for sure, that also.
Yeah, but I'm saying things that are important.
That's important.
Okay, I'm just saying we're careful that we don't want to lose things.
Yeah, photographs and stuff like that. You know?
Okay, so now we're talking about our moral values.
Right.
So we have to safeguard. You have to remember, doing an Avera is not a small thing. People say, so what? So I'll touch somebody and then one thing leads to another, end up sleeping with the person. So, okay, what's the big deal? Well, Torah says it's not good. So, remember, a lot of what we're talking about is assuming we're here last week, where he talked about where the Torah is guiding us how to go beyond our natures. So I'm not going to repeat that whole schmooze. But that's clearly what is involved over here. Whoop, did I go to... Did I do it enough? See, if I tap it too much, I don't know how to go backwards. So I'm sorry. Let's just make sure that I didn't. Yes, see, I tapped it too much.
I think it's just
much.
A couple of slides.
Yes, okay. Okay, so now, the Shulchan Aruch, now that's the Rambam. That's about the year 1100. Now we go to the Shulchan Aruch, which is the year 1500. And that's the code of Jewish law that we follow. All right, the Shulchan rules like the Rambam that Shomer Negiah is a Torah prohibition. The Ramah, which is the Ashkenazic Shulchan Aruch that goes together with that, he really goes very strong. We know there are three cardinal sins you must die. Normally, you don't have to, if you're it's life or do a sin, you can sin. But there's three cardinal sins. What are the three cardinal sins?
Idolatry,
murder, and immorality. Immorality.
Adultery.
Someone puts a gun to your head and say, go and sleep with your mother, whatever, You gotta let them shoot you. Okay? So the Ramah rules that a person should die rather than commit a prohibition of arayas, even those that have no kares penalty. Which means this idea of lo sikrivu, of coming into contact. According to the ruling of the Shulchan Aruch, that lo sikrivu is biblically prohibited. It's therefore a Torah prohibition of arayas, which the Talmud says, yahareg val yavor, you die and don't desecrate. That's how far the Ramah goes. Okay? And obviously, this prohibition applies equally to married and single women, now that single women don't go to the mikvah. So now, let's see how the Shulchan Aruch plays this out in the details. But the Rambam said in general, the Shulchan Aruch goes in detail. And he says like this, a person must stay very far from women, and vice versa. He's forbidden to signal with his hands or his feet or to hint with his eyes to one of the arayos. He's forbidden to be playful with her, to be frivolous in front of her, or to look upon her beauty. Even to smell the perfume upon her is forbidden. He's forbidden to gaze at women doing laundry in those days where the women's bodies were compromised as they were doing it by the ocean. We're not talking about a woman doing laundry in the laundry room now. He's forbidden to gaze at the colorful garments of a woman whom he recognizes and she's not wearing them, lest he come to have forbidden thoughts about her. If one gazes even at the little finger of a woman with the intent to have pleasure from it, it is though he gazed at her shameful place. Why? It is forbidden to listen to the voice of an erva or to look at her hair. If one intentionally does one of those things, we give him lashes of rebellion. When there was a time to give lashes.
Rabbinic.
Lashes. Well, not really. Rabbinic lashes, because we can't give biblical anyway now. Okay, so that is really saying a lot. Now, obviously, you know, well, we'll see in a minute. We're going to get this. So now, we'll be some just, besides this, more practical applications if this was not enough. Well, obviously, there's got to be separation of boys and girls in school. Right? There's got to be separation of that. When you're dating somebody, there should only be one purpose, to decide if you're going to marry that person or not. That'd be the only purpose. Why would you just go out with somebody just to go out and what? Talk. Okay, even that. You don't go out just to go out. You go out, there's a mitzvah to get married. Okay, so you got to meet a woman to get married to her. No mixed swimming, obviously, because you're going to see people not dressed modestly. No mixed dancing. No premarital, extramarital sex, or overt displays of affection. Now, there's nobody who argues on this. And you can look, you know, I guess you'll just have to trust me, okay? But, you know, I do all the work to look up everything. And you're trusting me, which is a good thing to do. So now, the question is, so let's have a little bit of understanding why. A little bit. So this is just brief. So what's the reason for this prohibition of just having affectionate contact? We're not talking about sleeping with them, just affectionate contact. Well, we know that the sex drive is one of among the most powerful urges in the human race. Now, animals can't control their sex drives. When they're animals in heat, they can't control themselves. But as people, we're meant to lift ourselves up beyond those urges. And this mitzvah helps us to distance from falling into that trap. And if we don't even take small liberties, then we won't become complacent and ultimately overly familiar with members of the opposite sex. If the safeguards are in place, we're not going to stumble in matters of a sexual nature. It's a well-known fact that people are attracted to the opposite sex, and they will go to great lengths to be involved with them. Now, there's another idea that we have to understand that Jews particularly, this is also for non-Jews, they don't have necessarily the same exact stringencies we have, but as Jews, we clearly understand we have a divine soul, and we have a body. Now the question is, if we overindulge in the body, then we become body people and not soulful people. And besides eating, sex is the top drive that exists. right? Should exist, especially when you're younger. But it exists. I mean, I don't have to tell you what society's all about, right? So there has to be a system of bridling it and directing it in the right place. Now, not to say, as we said last week, that intimacy is with a husband and wife is a very holy endeavor. It's a good thing with the right person, in the right place, in the right time. It's a mitzvah. But just like any other mitzvahs, wrong person, wrong place, wrong time would be a terrible aveira. So just like we keep kashrus to make sure we elevate the food that we eat, so similarly, the intimate relations that we have are elevated by the way the Torah shows us exactly what is the guidelines for that. So here's the point. It's not that God says no to all this, but he contextualizes how the Shibbat be done to a person's betterment rather than to his detriment. The Torah is saying if you want to be able to use sex in a holy way and to use in a way that will enhance the person you are and relationships with a person of the opposite sex, primarily your wife or husband or children, okay, or other or friends, it all goes together. The Torah gives you the guidance to have the optimal relationships, okay? Clearly, if people would adhere to this, there would be no need for a Me Too movement, would there?
No.
Now, everybody, you know, and this, you know, it's been going on for years and years. Everybody says, come on, what's the matter? Aren't you normal? What's the problem? It doesn't do anything to me. It doesn't do anything to see a woman who's half naked. It doesn't do anything. Sure, it does nothing. That's why we got all these Me Toos. It does absolutely nothing. Right? So clearly, we need to... The Talmud says that God created a very small organ in the body of a person. We know which organ they're talking about. And this is the formula. The more you feed it, the hungrier it gets. The less you feed it, the more satiated it is. Okay? So, therefore, the idea being here in this area, less is more. Less is more. And therefore, we have to limit where you will show affection and intimacy towards whom. Now, obviously, there's a difference between the way a husband and wife show affection to each other than a parent and a child and siblings, etc., etc. Okay? So clearly, what the Torah is saying, it's not a healthy thing for people to be involved with people of the opposite sex for no, we'll say, halachic purpose or useful, productive purpose than merely to have fun. There's other ways of enjoying oneself in life, and this is not one of them. Yes, with your spouse it is, but not in other ways. So I hope that area is clear, unless someone would like to ask a question, unless I'm speaking to converted over here. Okay, yes? Got to speak up, the air conditioning.
Modern society where women doctors, lawyers, etc.
So we're going to get to that. We are going to get to that. That's on the agenda. That's on the agenda. We're just trying to set the stage here. Now, here's an interesting question that was dealt with in the 1300s by the Rivash. Rav Isaac ben Sheshes Perfect was the issue of, you think it's a new issue? You have this issue today. Many singles who know, well, if a woman is single, she's had a menstrual period, any single women, single women do not go to the mikvah. They don't go to the mikvah until they get married. So by definition, it makes her a nidah. By definition, it makes her one of the arayos that if you are intimate with her, you get kares. That's bad news. Torah already says, and you can't even have any closeness, any kind of physical contact. It's biblically prohibited. So now people who want to be able to go out with girls and boys, even though they're not married, they found a great solution. This is the solution. Premarital sex, just have them go to the mikvah.
Really?
Why don't they go to the mikvah? Just like any one of married women,
wow,
who they count their days and they do the preparations, they go to the mikvah. Now the quote-unquote nida is off. And now have fun. And there's nothing wrong with it. And if anything, it's much better because they're doing less of a sin. Less of a sin. Because if she's not Anita, now you're talking about Koresh. So this was a topic that is talked about in the modern Orthodox circles. I use that term liberally. I don't mean it against any people who feel they're modern Orthodox. I don't think this is such a problem in Toronto, but in New York, it's a major issue. It's a major issue. Where Orthodox Jewish women are, single women, are going to mikvahs so that when they're going to have their intimacy with their boyfriends, they're not having any chorus. So you figure this must be a modern issue. No, this was an issue 800 years ago that was asked to the Rivash. I'm telling you, sex is sex is sex. It hasn't changed.
That's good.
The halacha hasn't changed.
It does.
Okay? You know, there may be pills and this and that, but the basic urge is there. Okay. So somebody asked him, like, maybe it's a good idea. Because the younger generation in the 1300s, they just couldn't control themselves. So he says, and why didn't the Torah? Torah seems to talk about, you know, you can't be involved. The halacha focuses more on married women and things like why is there more talk about single women? Why are they talking about it? So this is part of what he writes. Very long teshuva. I'm trying to just get the main parts that he writes. And they had no need to discuss the case of an unmarried woman. Why didn't they discuss it? For sex with an unmarried woman is forbidden even when she's not in her nida period. Not period, it's period, period.
Yes.
Wow, is this? According to Rambam, this is a biblical prohibition that one would receive lashes for if a woman made herself available in this way. That is to say, to have sex in a way of fornication, and this would be included in the category of, the Torah says, you shall not have a kedesha in your midst, which is loosely translated as a prostitute. We don't mean the prostitute for pay, which could also be including the prostitute for pay, but it means good old-fashioned single sex in the city for a woman, even if she's gone to the mikvah. The Torah already says it's prohibited. It's not a new thing, right? But the difference is it doesn't carry chorus. Yeah, it only gets lashed. It's prohibited by the Torah. Although she does not sit in a booth of prostitutes and make herself available to all, it's still, the Torah clearly says it's not allowed. Clear. So now what you are astounded about, how is it the rabbis did not institute immersion for an unmarried woman? Is that the masses, did you hear? The masses would not stumble as a result of her. In many words, so a man having sex with her would not transgress the prohibition of Nida. The masses.
What's the masses?
Men, harbei anashim.
Like the majority.
Not majority. Let's not say the majority. But the masses. Okay, there's a lot of people that wanted to have, as they would say, kosher sex. That's what it is. She went to the mikvah. What else could be wrong? Right? Well, the Torah says you can't do that. Torah understood she'd go to the mikvah. You still can't do that. So why didn't... So he says, there is nothing to be astounded about, for since an unmarried woman is forbidden even if she's not in need, as we have written, then the opposite is the case. If she were to immerse, that would create a stumbling block, for then people would be lenient regarding the provision that applies to her. Figure, well, and that's what's happening exactly now. Well, you don't get kares for it. All it is God said not to. So I'm not going to get my soul cut off. So as long as my soul isn't cut off, so I'll take my chances. And as long as nobody warns me in advance, I can't get lashed for it. And we don't have a bezdin nowadays to give lashes. So it's only a sin. I'll do tshuva on Yom Kippur and everything will be fine. So this is not a joke, because this was an issue. This was tshuva Aser of Avadja Yosef in Eretz Yisrael. This is not so simple.
Okay, so then
this is not so simple, because the government wants, it's a public mikvah. We should be able to go to public mikvah, right? And you should allow single women to go to mikvah. Now, generally speaking, we don't allow, in Toronto at least, we don't allow single women to go into a mikvah, unless it's before her wedding, but just a regular single woman. And generally, again, I don't know the ins and outs, I'm not in the ladies' mikvah, good thing, but but I mean to say, the mikvah lady kind of knows the crowd. You know, you kind of know who the married women are. I can imagine, you know, God forbid, a nice base Yaakov girl walks and wants to go to the mikveh. Says, "What are you going to the mikveh? You getting married?" "No." So I'm sure the mikveh ladies in Toronto are instructed, "Sorry, you can't go into the mikveh." Now, when you're dealing with bigger cities like New York, where, you know, nobody knows who anybody is, and there's like dozens of mikvahs all around, and a lady who lives in Brooklyn may just want to go to use a mikveh in Queens, they don't ask for their IDs. Okay, so this becomes a serious problem. In Israel, it's a much bigger problem because it's government run. So now you're dealing with politics. I don't want to talk about that. That's another topic for another time. But obviously, Rav Avadya Yosef was very strongly against it. Okay, so this shows you there's no difference if it's a single woman in the most kosher way going to the mikvah. Okay, you're going to say, what's the lesser of two evils? Okay, obviously the lesser on the one hand is, okay, you don't get kares for it. But once you allow that, that means it's open season.
Yeah.
At least you should know. So, you know, you're going to say, well, but they're doing it anyway, Rabbi. They're doing it anyway. So all they're going to do is at least help them out. No. So they're saying if we would allow that, that means, number one, you're acknowledging it and you're accepting it. And then many more people, as they say, will come out of the closet for this. And if anything was holding them back about Karis, is one. And more than that, you're aiding and abetting premarital sex, which clearly is not a good idea because... people, I mean, there's studies on this. People engaged with a lot of premarital sex, you know, the odds of staying married to the one they finally get married to are much less, and that's a much broader topic. So that's why that is not allowed either. Yes, ma'am.
So you're citing the woman's It's the same thing.
It's the same kares, equal opportunity for punishment, you know, or reward. It's the same thing. It doesn't matter at all. Yeah.
The other point that comes up is
I have a strong feeling we're not going to come close to finishing today, but that's fine.
The problem that comes up is when you said single women go to the mikvah. You weren't as specific about how old they are. We have a shidduch crisis going on. You told us that sex next to food is the next thing. So you've got a woman in her late 30s. She hasn't been fortunate enough to meet her masher. The physical urges are there. You know, you can do whatever, but those urges come out. You know, the old... that's why a lot of the Orthodox will get married earlier so that they can...
So what's your question, dear?
The question is, the ladies in their 30s, the guys, they just haven't met their basher yet.
So, and your question is...
What do you do?
There's nothing we can do. What do you do with people who are poor? And they would like to live in a house, but they don't have money for a house.
That's not the...
You know? So that becomes the challenge. The challenge is for a person to still... keep their moral values even when they are single. Right? Even when they are single. Now, this doesn't make any difference. We could flip this. Is it any different than, let's say, you have a man who is married for 50 years, happily married. You have another woman who is married happily for years. Now, one's a widow, one's a widower. Now they want to get married, second marriage, right? In their 60s, 70s, or 80s. But, you know, getting married is very, dicey. You know, there's financial issues and this and that, and what if it doesn't work out and this and that. So they figure they'll just live together, right? You know, so again, clearly 100% prohibited. Clearly.
If she's past that age...
doesn't matter. It has nothing with her being a Nida. Again, it is prostitution. It is free sex. It doesn't matter. The age doesn't matter. So, and if you want to be with this person, so get married to her. Right? So these are the challenges. So yes, you're single... we all have to work on it. We're not saying it's not an issue, but you can't permit something just because the person doesn't have their basher yet.
So it applies to divorced people.
It applies to anybody. any single person at any age, at any quote-unquote history,
male or female,
cannot engage in any, forget about sex, cannot be engaged in holding hands or just flirting or a platonic relationship is absolutely prohibited. There's a number of women that a woman can be friends with and a number of men that a man can be friends with. Okay? Yeah?
I think, can I add some small example? Like, you know, even if I'm a thief, like, no matter the door is locked or it's unlocked, if I don't want to steal something, and if my goal is not to steal, so I won't steal no matter if it's closed or locked, right? So that's the main thing. If my goal is to be, like, you know, moral and to serve Hashem, no matter I'm 20 or 50,
yeah. Listen, it's a test. I'm not minimizing. It's a test. But Hashem tests all of us in certain ways, and we have to overcome our natures. And there's much more to talk about, but I don't want to become politically incorrect, especially with my wife in the room. So I'll just leave it at that. I'll leave it at that. I'm not saying it's easy. I'm not being empathetic. We have to work on getting people to have shidduchim. It's very important. And it's also, you know, if some situations, not just some. I said it many times.
You did say some. Right?
People will get married because nobody's good enough for them. They're looking for Mr. Right. So guess, or Mr. Right, or Mrs. Right, whatever, you know. And, well, that guy's a schlepper, you know. He's well, guess what? Maybe that's the one you should be marrying. Okay, but that's another issue. I'm not saying there are many people who would marry anybody and they're not getting any shit.
Sounds like another hot topic.
I'm just saying it's a challenge. It's a problem. Just like, again, poverty is a problem. Wouldn't you feel there's a lot of people in the world, they're poor, so what do? You steal. You steal. I don't have any money. I might have a little night, you know. Why someone broke into our driveway a couple months ago and stole my son-in-law's car and stole two other people's cars in one night? Why? Just to want them to have some money. Whatever. So that doesn't mean you have an excuse. It's a test. You have to live in poverty. So it's a test. We can't bend the rules. We can try harder to find shidduchim for them. You can do all kinds of things to find, even speed dating and things like whatever to help them find a shidduch. We should be very engaged in that. But we can't break the rules because there's quote-unquote a crisis. Okay, so what type of touching is prohibited? So it seems we covered everything, but there's an important thing. Now, there's a very important scholar named the Shach, Sifsei Kohen, commentary to Shulchan Aruch, has this amazing deduction in the Rambam. Not all agree with him, but this is the basis of any leniencies we're going to see. He rules that according to the Rambam, remember he said the Rambam, we underlined that word, that it was from taiva, a touching out of taiva, yeah, out of desire. So Shach rules that according to the Rambam, the prohibition is limited to contact of an intimate and sexual nature. Okay? Absent such sexual content, there's no prohibition even on a rabbinic level, says the Shach. In other words, if a boy goes over to a girl and says, you know, I'd like to hold your hand, because it feels very nice and very good, and you can't do that. You can't do that. Okay, but let's say they're stuck. She's stuck. The car's stuck in the mud, and they both have to push the car out, and they may be touching their hands as they're pushing out. There doesn't seem to be a lot of affection going on over there, so then that would be okay. Okay, the Shach is speaking in a specific situation I don't want to get, but it seems very important is the person's feelings about the touching. Now, generally speaking, if young people, you know, want to touch each other, usually it's some kind of an affectionate way. So the Rambam is saying the Shach deduces that's the prohibition. Now, if it's not that, and that's going to open the door to a lot of potential leniencies, then there's no problem. But again, not all rule like him. But that is one big leniency. Now we come to the issue you wanted to talk about. Shaking hands. Okay, that's what we started our class with, shaking hands. So let's start the Talmudic source. We know there's a parsha in the Torah that deals with a sota, a woman who's suspected of adultery. There's a whole procedure she must do in the temple. And part of the procedure is she brings a meal offering, which she holds in her hands. And the Kohen, who's working on the case, as it were, helps her wave the offering. And he puts his hands under her hands as she waves it around. Ah, he's touching her. The Torah says the man can touch the woman. So the Yerushalmi asks, how could this be done appropriately? The Gemara goes through a whole bunch of answers. The final answer is, no, even a yot. At first they thought, maybe it's an old Kohen, like he's almost going to die anyway, so he has no Yetzer Hara. Said, no, it's not. It could be even a young whippersnapper of a Kohen, since it's very brief contact, and it's done in the procedure of the biblical procedure, there's not a concern of inflaming the Yetzer Hara. All right, so you see, there's already, the Torah already says there's a certain exception. Clearly, there's no, affectionate that the Kohen has to this woman.
Desire.
There's no desire in doing it. He's just doing his job, as it were. Okay, it's kind of out in public and the whole thing. But anyway, you see, there's something allowed over there. So now we'll jump to the medieval sources. The Sefer Hasidim, 1090. You see, this amazing. It's just amazing that it's not like just today it's been a problem. It's always been a problem. Okay? So he says like this, and this is now dealing with non-Jewish, dealing with non-Jews. He's not even talking about Jews. He says, a Jewish man should not shake hands with a non-Jewish woman or a non-Jewish woman with a Jewish man. Cannot shake hands. A Jewish woman should not shake hands with a non-Jewish man or a non-Jewish man with a Jewish woman, even if the hand is wrapped in garment. They used to wear gloves.
Yes.
As a preventative measure against forbidden relations. It's not allowed. The Ben Ish Chai, who lived much later in the 19th century, he quotes the Sefer Hasidim, and he's talking about shaking hands as a greeting, as was customary in Europe. To greet people, you could not do this. And the Ben Ish Chai continues. You can read this? Anyway, it was customary in Europeans for a guest to greet his host or hostess by holding his or her hand in a firm grip as an indication of friendship and goodwill. An excellent description of a handshake. He writes that a God-fearing Jew should certainly refrain from this practice because it involves holding and touching the hand, derech chiba. That's the Hebrew word, derech chiba, the way of affection. Even if you're not kissing the person, but you're showing your goodwill is also affection. There's a broad range of affection. There's affection, l'amour, French affection, and then there's, you can call, Yekish affection. I like you, you're a nice guy, you're a decent person type of affection. The very reason for, okay, now, he explains why the Sefer specifically focused on a Jew shaking hands with a non-Jew, and why did he mention a Jewish man and a Jewish woman? Why did he talk about that? So he says, the Sefer Hasidim teaches us that even if it's a non-Jew who extends his or her hand, as is their custom, that's not the Jewish custom. And as the Jewish man or woman will be embarrassed because the non-Jews around him will laugh at him if he does not reciprocate. So now, maybe that's a reason to be lenient. Because that's the non-Jewish custom. It's going to be embarrassing. It's still forbidden to return the handshake. And it goes without saying you wouldn't do it with Jews, because the Jew wouldn't even think of it. It's not to say, well, he only said with non-Jews, but with Jews is for sure. Okay, no, that's not what it means at all. So these are early sources saying you can't even do a handshake. Now, here are all the issues to consider about, let's say you're in a business corporation, right? You have a client, whatever, you're shaking hands. Here are the issues. Let's start with the, I don't know what you call pro and con. We'll say con means not to shake, okay? There's two ways to look at it, right? But the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, as quoting, really paraphrasing the Shulchan Aruch, quotes a Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. Be bold as a leopard, light as an eagle, swift as a deer, and strong as a lion to do the will of your Father in heaven. What does bold as a leopard mean? You should not be ashamed before people who mock you for worshiping Hashem. So one of the reasons, you go say, if I don't shake my hands, they're going to think I'm crazy. Bold as a leopard. If it's not allowed, it's not allowed. Gemara in Brachas. There is an aspect of kavod abrius. Kavod abrius means you don't do things to hurt people's feelings. But there's interesting. What if a person is wearing a garment of shatnez, a prohibition of wool and linen, which 100% shatnez? It's like not a question. And they're in the middle of the street. What do you got to do? Got to strip. Got to take it off. Right? It's a biblical prohibition. You can't. Every second you have it, it's not allowed. Okay, it depends how much clothes you got on afterwards. Okay, it depends. But whatever. But you know what? It doesn't matter about certain things. Now, kavod abrius is such a fundamental principle of halacha. The Gemara rules that it even overrides a negative mitzvah. But not all the time. Not all the time. The Gemara concludes only certain rabbinic mitzvahs, but not biblical mitzvahs. So when it's a biblical mitzvah, which this is, so even kavod abrius does not override it. That's halacha. Also, Gemara, we quoted already, one who counts money for a woman from his hand to her. And the reason is kind of because he wants to look at her pretty finger of nail polish. Ooh, she has beautiful fingers. Such dainty fingers. It really looks attractive. Right? Even if he has accumulated Torah and good deeds like Moshe, our teacher, he will not be absolved from the punishment of Gehenna. So it's a very dangerous thing to put. So that's on the con side. On the pro side, on the other hand, there's always another hand. Dirachel darchei Noam v'chol nesivo seh shalom. Mishle, the ways of the Torah are pleasant and pleasing to others. If I don't return the handshake, it's not pleasing to others. There's another mitzvah, loving God. The Gemara in Yoma says, what does loving God include? He says, one should do so, that to make Hashem beloved by other people. If you love God, you'll do things that will make God beloved to other people. So how does that work? Well, one should do so in that he should read Torah, learn Mishnah, serve Torah scholars. He should be pleasant with people in his business transactions. What do people say about such a person? Fortunes his father who taught him Torah. Fortunes his teacher who taught him Torah. Woe to the people who have not studied Torah. Right? So-and-so who taught him Torah, see how pleasant are his ways, how proper are his deeds. That's the way we should want to act. On the other hand, but when he reads Torah and learns Mishnah and serves Torah's house, but his business practices are not done faithfully, he does not speak pleasantly with other people, what do people say about him? Woe to so-and-so who studied Torah. Woe to his father who taught him Torah. Woe to his teacher who taught him Torah. So-and-so studied Torah. See how destructive are his deeds and how ugly are his ways. And look at that Orthodox Jew, won't shake my hand. So there is a certain pro or con over here. And the earlier authorities were more on the side to say, too bad. Now, let's take it more contemporary into the 1900s. Remember the friendly Rav Moshe Feinstein we spoke about last week? So I didn't have to put his picture up a second time. Mm-hmm. Okay, these are Tshuva's response he wrote in the 50s, 60s, and 70s. Okay, remember, timing doesn't change. What I hope you got at this lesson is, well, now that it's the 2020, times have not changed at all, ever. In three separate places, he says you may not shake hands with another woman. Now, the first time he writes it really strongly, clearly forbidden. Right?
This is Jew or non-Jew.
Anybody. Yeah, he says certainly true of the married woman, even with a single woman, because a single woman's Anita. A non-Jewish woman's 10 times worse. You can't sleep with a non-Jewish woman. That's really terrible. Torah says it's like idol worship.
A single woman.
A lot of people say, there's only a problem with Jewish women. No, non-Jewish women, there's plenty of prohibitions. Sleeping with non-Jewish men or women is, Gemara uses the wording, it's like you're worshiping idols, like you're sleeping with an idol. So don't think with a non-Jew, I have this little non-Jew, Shiksela, in the background, I can do whatever I want with her. With Jews, I'm quoted. No way. It's not any different at all. In another response, he writes that physical contact, which is not accompanied by it, is not forbidden as the Shach rules. But look at this important line he says. It's difficult to be lenient in the bold, because can one really be absolutely certain that there's no element of attraction involved when shaking a woman's hand? Okay, now, you're going to say, well, this man who's a cold fish, nothing turns him on. Shkoyach. But if we're going to make a rule that men can shake women's hands, there's a lot of, you know, guys who are closet oglers, and they get a good chance. You know, you can tell when a man shakes a woman's hand and he just doesn't let go of her.
Yeah.
You know, wants to, you know, really feel her hand, right? So, you know, can you honestly say, maybe in theory the shach is correct, but how does that turn out into practice? All right, the questioner mentioned that he had seen that even observant Jews are lenient about shaking hands with women. Rav Moshe writes that perhaps they reasoned that there was no element of desire involved in the contact and that it was therefore permitted. He concludes that, practically speaking, however, it's difficult to rely on this leniency. Okay. In a third responsa, he again writes that shaking hands with a woman in greeting is certainly clearly forbidden. Citing his first response, he writes, we must be concerned with the possibility of taking pleasure in the physical contact. He also cites his second response, well, one should judge those who do shake hands with women favorably. In other words, what if you see an Orthodox Jew? You should judge them favorably, as they may be assuming there's no element of attraction involved. And again, he says it's difficult to rely on this. So he wouldn't lambast people who shake women's hands, yeah, but he thinks they're sorely mistaken. They are underestimating the power of physical attraction. Yes, I imagine, you know, the Talmud discussed people like Rabbi Yochanan, who were people who were living in another planet. And when they looked at anything in this world, they didn't see flesh and blood. They saw just souls. And there were great tzaddikim who stood outside of the mikveh. And women would come out of the mikveh. And Rabbi Yochanan, who was a tzaddik, women would look at him so that they would have children who would be handsome like him. And they said, aren't you worried about Eli? He says, to me, they're like geese. You know, they're like ducks. But for him, it was. He just saw ducks. But we're not on that world. We're not in this world. We're regular people. And for regular people, we can't make any of these exceptions. So Rav Moshe clearly says, he's saying, you know, I understand the logic to be lenient like the shach, but how can anyone be sure that doesn't feel anything with this? Interesting story. In 19, so I have a little story in here. When Rav Avadya Yosef was serving as chief rabbi of Israel, he received the Israel Prize Award. During the ceremony, he was summoned to the stage in which sat many of the leading Israeli dignitaries, including the Minister of Education and the Prime Minister of the time, Golda Meir. Rav Avadya cordially shook the hands of the Minister of Education upon receiving the award and was then given an outstretched hand by the Prime Minister, Golda Meir, who also desired to shake his hand to congratulate him. The cameras were all focused on an event which was broadcast live to all Israeli media. The Rav cordially shook his head as a notion of engagement and respect towards her gesture, although he did not return the handshake. Okay, so now he did not shake her hand. Okay, Rav Menashe Klein, another big posek in New York, he says, he was asked, now here's the focus shifts a little bit. If a woman extends her hand in greeting, all right, that's already a little bit different now.
Yes.
Is it permitted to respond by shaking hands even though it involves touching her hand? And the questioner mentions that he had heard that Moshe Feinstein ruled that it is absolutely prohibited, but nonetheless, he had seen very observant people who were leaning about shaking a woman's hand in order to avoid embarrassing her. He had also heard there were some Rosh Yeshivas who permitted. That's what he heard. So what does Rav Klein answer? He says it's forbidden to even suggest that a Rosh Yeshiva would permit shaking hands with a woman to spare her embarrassment. It would be unthinkable to permit an act related to such a serious prohibition because a woman has extended her hand, even if she was only done so because she is unaware of the prohibition. I'm also not convinced that there is, in fact, an element of embarrassment involved in not reciprocating the handshake. He's not so convinced that the people are so embarrassed. Now, he says, he continues, there were those who allowed themselves to be lenient in this regard because they lived in countries such as Germany and France, where promiscuity was rampant and it was common practice for people to shake hands with anyone, man or woman. They relied on the shach's opinion. But he says it's not proper to rely on this leniency, which as Rav Moshe ruled is very weak. So again, now I could quote many, many more rabbis, but that's just a sampling of the one side. And therefore, the conclusion on the side to forbid these kinds of handshakes is, number one, although the shach has the leniency if it's not in an affectionate way, there are those who disagree with him. That's number one. Number two, that it's possible even the Shach would forbid shaking hands, because when he ruled it, it was regarding someone like a physician who's involved in his work and was part of his duty. That was the responsa that he was dealing with. Would not apply for regular greetings. That was not what the Shach was talking about. Number three, he said, even if handshake did not begin as derechiba of affection, at times the contact itself arouses desire. You may think it won't, and it turns into derechiba, which would be prohibited. So therefore, that's the camp of not allowed. Yes?
Yeah. Would you be allowed to lie to like not have someone be in?
We're going to talk about that, I hope, if I have time. Yes, I've got to go quick, because I'm on slide 23 and there's 50 slides. What?
Minhagim. The Sfaradim has a minhag of kissing.
Kiss, okay, that's...
And hug, and they're, it's in the air. They don't really kiss. It just... But that's their minhag. Yeah, that's in...
Morocco. Okay, what can I tell you? You saw Badi Yosef did not shake Golda Meir's hand. There's others.
Maybe he kissed her.
Let's look on the other side. I got to go quick.
It doesn't kiss him.
Now, there's I know when you hear the word Shlomo Carlebach, you think of the guy who was strumming on the guitar, which he for sure kissed everybody. We're not talking about that Shlomo Carlebach. There was a Shlomo Carlebach who lived in the 1800s. He was a big rabbi in Germany, and he ruled leniently. But he, remember, he's in Germany, where it's like they're nuts over there. It's like there's really immorality all over the place. And he based it on the Shach. That Shach who said it's not based on affection. Rav Carlebach mentions that the problem involved in shaking a woman's hand is that it may lead to improper thoughts. In his early years, he writes, he had refrained from shaking hands with women, but was unable to maintain this stricter practice. Most women were not familiar with the prohibition, would innocently extend their hand to men in greeting. Here's the important clause of his responsa. There could be nothing more humiliating than refusing to reciprocate. Respect for the dignity of others is an overriding consideration. The Talmud teaches that respect for the dignity of others is so great that it overrides a negative commandment of the Torah. Okay, but there's different ways of looking at that. Another rabbi, Reb Chaim Berlin, chief rabbi of Moscow, he writes, although he first writes, you're not allowed to even look, the Gemara says you can look at the little pinky of a woman. However, if one's intentions are pure and innocent, as he is sure is the case with his student that asked the question, and he is not motivated by a desire to look at her, it would be permitted to hand money to a woman. If there is a way to avoid shaking hands, it is certainly preferable. However, if there's no other way around it, for example, a woman's already extended her hand and he has no improper thoughts in mind, he need not be strict in this regard. And what does he quote? The words of Derachel Darchei Noam, the ways of the Torah are pleasant. Rabbis tell us that the name of Hashem should be beloved. We should not cause others to say that religious Jews are mishugoyim and ill-mannered. So,
would you look at that from the very first shot that you gave us, like that very first slide, where you ended up a lot of negativity, where the guy's writing, look at this, and it's terrible, so would you...
I think I've been, as Fox News, from and balanced. I've showed you both sides of the coin over here.
You could see how
but,
he had
but,
a very
but you could see
reaction.
We have to not always worry about negative reactions. Yeah. Conclusions of the lenient opinion. If you wish to be lenient... Okay, I'm sorry, I just don't have time. I wish I could, but I'm going to be sorely behind. I got to get in. So number one, first, the situation is such that refusing to shake a woman's extended hand would humiliate her. That's number one. Or you may not know 100%, but you assume it would. She's a real woman's liber. You know what kind of person she is. Second, one's intentions are entirely l'shem shemayim, to prevent the chilul Hashem. Now, you got to know what your spiritual profile is. Because if you're the same guy who talks in shul all the time, you're not too worried about Kavod Shemayim, are you? It's got to fit your spiritual profile. Third, refusal to shake hands would cause onlookers to view observant Jews as boorish and ill-mannered. Depends on the situation. If you're sitting, you know, at the Democratic National Convention... And the guy's hand was, I don't know what you're doing there, but if your hand was extended there, you know, it'll be a problem. It must be stressed that even according to lenient opinions, there are grounds for leniency only when the Shach's ruling applies, meaning that the contact is not derech chiba, you're going to feel nothing from it. And only when the other party has initiated the handshake. That's the only grounds to be lenient, knowing there are many who are not lenient. So what I've tried to educate us tonight is if you see a Hasidish guy who will not shake a woman's hand, he stands on firm halachic ground. If you see a person who does shake a woman's hand, who extended, and she's a very, you know, sensitive type of person, etc., etc., and you're trying to be makar of this woman spiritually, okay, and it could take her off the derech, you know, maybe you're a kiruv rabbi, and right, this might set the whole tone to drive her, you know, again, and it does nothing for you, you're 100%, it's like you're not even noticing the woman, you have on whom to rely on. So now we're going to answer your question. What if you don't want to shake the person's hand because you want to be the strictly, you don't want to cause any problems? So we give you four options. First of all, keep your hands full. If you're holding files, a briefcase, or the like, a smile and a nod in lieu of a handshake may be more readily accepted. It's easier to employ this method from a reasonable distance. It works best when you are more than an arm's length away. If you know you're going to meet someone of the opposite sex for whatever reason, your hand should be full. That's one option. Option two, have a business card strategically in hand and place the other party's extended hand instead of shaking it. Here's my card.
The rabbi had a dollar.
Here's my card. Okay, the next ones, you can call them polite. I don't know if you want to do this. When truly desperate, pretend to have a cough or allergy attack and cough or sneeze into your own hand. This is an effective deterrent, but it probably cannot be used too often with the same person. Or else, simply be honest, explain up front that due to religious considerations, you do not shake hands with anyone of the opposite gender. Or else, make an alternative gesture of recognition, such as bowing the head.
It's Japanese,
the
right?
Yes.
Here's a story with the Munkacha Rebbe. Munkacha Rebbe, Reb Chaim Shapiro, when he met the Queen of Holland.
Oh my gosh.
The Queen Wilhelmina of Holland once came to meet the previous Munkacha Rebbe to receive a blessing to have children. She was childless. Upon her outstretching her hand to shake the Rebbe's hand, the Rebbe replied that it's unbefitting for a commoner to touch the hand of her majesty. The queen was very impressed and it made a positive impression upon her. The queen subsequently gave birth to a daughter.
Wow.
Okay, so conclusions and applications. Again, the lenient position, to repeat, it assumes that shaking hands is not derech chiba on the part of either individual. Really, either. If there are any improper thoughts, this is prohibited. It assumes Allah is like the Shach, that negiyah is permitted when there is no derech chiba. It applies where there would be embarrassment or humiliation to the other person. It assumes that one's intentions are for the sake of heaven. Nevertheless, touching in an office environment often, not always, is derech chiba, and it's far better to try and avoid the issue wherever possible. Now, a whole bunch of other scenarios that are more practical, as they say. Okay, modern informal equivalents of handshaking, like high fives, will probably be more halakhically problematic as they're more informal and teenage, where it's a little bit looser. You know what I'm saying? A little bit wilder. You know, do a high five, and then what comes out of the high five? Like that. And then you start hugging that. You know, it's as opposed to the formal handshake. Social greetings through kissing are very difficult to halakhically justify.
Even in the air.
Even in the air.
No, the air, like, that's different.
We're
talking about kissing, mamish.
Yeah. I understand.
You know, like, there's no, you just, you know, let's, you know, just, you, a guy goes over to a lady and just gives her a kiss on the cheek. That's much worse than shaking a hand. Now, with older relatives, may be permitted, as it's not their chiba, we always call the dead fish option. You got to shake your hand, just have the hand like that. Just have the hand like that. Clinical touching, such as medical examinations, physical therapy, are clearly not derech chiba and are permitted. If a same-gender doctor is available and suitable, it's preferable. But if you can't...
The dental hygienist is often a problem.
Yeah, if it's impossible. It's impossible, that's fine. Because they're doing their job, as it were. Right. There's no affection over there. Assistants and workers in care homes for the elderly or disabled are also likely to fall within this category. Although there may be gray areas in which a post-sex should be consulted, let's say hydrotherapy in a pool with an adult of the opposite gender might need a shiloh. But regular physiotherapy for older people especially is more lenient. Other relevant factors may include the mental age of the patient and whether the therapist is male or female. The halacha is often stricter on men working with female patients as opposed to female practitioners and male patients for obvious reasons. Hairdressers can be classified as involved in their profession and thus not their chiba, unless it's one of these really Italiano, you know, macho man that all the time is fawning over him. That's another story. Okay. Massage seems clear to be prohibited in most areas. I need a massage, so I'm sure my wife would really like it if I told her I had a female massage person.
Masseuse. Right? Masseuse.
Student training on the opposite gender is also likely to be also prohibited, but actual practice of physiotherapy will be permitted on the basis of the practitioners involved in their profession. Okay, that's some examples. Okay, seat switching. Okay, for the most part, the poskim are lenient on this. Even Rav Moshe Feinstein and Rav Menashe Klein, who said you couldn't shake hands, they said unintentional physical contact caused by crowding on public transit is typically not derech chiba. Okay? However, it's important to know that the poskim do not permit a man who knows that he will be unable to control his thoughts to travel on crowded public transportation. Wow. But Moshe also holds that one may sit next to a woman if there's no other seat available because the contact on mass transit is unintentional and not derech chiba. Other poskim disagree with Rav Moshe on the question of sitting next to a woman. Rav Wozner, for example, says you shouldn't do that. But most poskim say it's okay. It's clear that Moshe would agree that a man feels that he has some element of pleasure from sitting next to a woman, he's obligated to get up. He should do this best to be discreet so that his behavior does not cause a chil Hashem. This all caused the RCA in 2016, you know what's going on with the airplanes. You got these really frum guys who sit there and say, I don't want this lady sitting next to me. And causes the hupka. The RCA clearly concludes, look at the last 3 points, one seeking to sit only next to members of one's own sex should, prior to boarding, arrange for such seating. Yes. Among those in one's travel party, purchase extra seats next to one's own seat, or the like, just as anyone seeking other special seating accommodations on airplanes should do. 2, one should avoid asking a person seated in an adjacent seat in a public venue to move because that person is a member of the opposite sex. If one is nonetheless asked to move for this reason, one may politely and firmly refuse, thereby reinforcing the proper behavioral norm between the sexes in such venues. One may also assent to such a request if it is made unobtrusively and courteously, according to one's best judgment of the immediate situation. The bottom line is we're out of time. So we have to leave it at that. We didn't cover some other issues in terms of relatives and same gender, and the answer to that original article from the Ethicist, Jonathan Rosenblum gives a fantastic answer to that. But we're out of time, so we'll have to leave that for now. Maybe another week we'll pick up a few more things. But I think we got a good initial take on this. Thanks everybody for listening.
Yes, let's move on.